This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 7:45 in the morning. I'm Koo Se Chuang and I'm joined by Wong Shao Ning. Now, Malaysia, as we know, has grown a lot over the past few decades. It's brought improvement to the lives of households across the board. Incomes have risen. The real average household income in Malaysia tripled from about 2,600 ringgit 21 years ago to about 8,000 ringgit last year. And poverty has fallen. The absolute poverty rate fell from 16.5% to near just below 6% in the same 3 decades, even though Malaysia has recently broadened the net of who counts as being in poverty. But obviously, challenges remain.
And that's what the Khazanah Research Institute's State of Household 2020 report highlights. For example, we've seen household income growth rates moderate, as has GDP growth. There's also been some concerns over the cost of living pressures and sufficient social security systems.
So to explain all these issues and more, with us today is Adam Firoz, a research associate at the Khazanah Research Institute. He's also one of the authors of the report. Your report, Adam, talked about how household income growth has moderated in the past 3 decades. What can be attributed this to?
So in our report, we tried to give a long-term assessment of household welfare. And our study is based on the latest report of the Household Income Survey, which is 2019, predates this current crisis that we have right now. So we thought that it was especially pertinent to take a long-term view. So yes, one of the things that we found is growth over the 3 decades has been slower. So growth was actually fastest during the 90s. At least leading up to the Asian financial crisis in 97, then was about half in the 2000s up to the global financial crisis in 08. And then in the last decade, we did see a slight recovery, but it was still slower than what was seen during the 90s. There are many factors behind the slowing growth. Of course, there are global factors, but we did not, to be honest, go so in-depth into why growth has been slower. But we argue that a lot of it does come down to jobs and how our economy is structured, because the issue of welfare, we cannot divorce it from the structure of the economy.
So you've highlighted inequality in Malaysia. For example, you found the residual income for the bottom 10% of income groups was only 200 ringgit, whereas for the top 10%, it's 12,653 ringgit. What are the implications of this?
Now, based on this calculation, we did see that the bottom 10 or the B10 only had 200 ringgit, whereas the top 10 had over 12,000 ringgit. But ultimately, the implication of low residual incomes, the 200 ringgit that you mentioned, actually, arguably, some people might still think that it's high. One thing that I want to actually emphasize is not all expenses are accounted for, so taxes, but also things like your EPF and SOCSO contributions, or even inter-household transfers, you know, your give money to your parents who live somewhere else. So once all these things are accounted for, the leftover income can actually be negative for a lot of households. And we found that half the households in a few districts actually had zero net residual income. Low residual income worryingly does, of course, mean low savings. And savings, as we know, is important, especially in today's time. With the pandemic, where people have lost their jobs and are forced to live off their savings.
Yeah, so Adam, what social welfare and protections are needed to tackle poverty?
So for one, it would be to extend welfare to cover those who are in relative poverty, because in the past, our social assistance has mainly targeted those in poverty. So you would want to expand the target group to sort of help those in relative poverty. And based on our calculations, we need at least like 20 billion per year in order to eradicate relative poverty. And this is mainly in the form of cash transfers. Undoubtedly, it is a lot considering that the total spending for subsidies and social assistance is about 30 billion. But it does ensure all households in relative poverty, as well as those in absolute poverty, are brought above the poverty line income. Unlike certain other programs that have existed, for example, the Bantuan Sara Hidup, which arguably is quite small when you look at it on a monthly basis, and they don't necessarily propel households to even above the poverty line. So in a way, we are having to balance between scale, because the Bantuan Sara Hidup does target 40% of households, which is even larger than 16%. But, you know, 16% of people are in even more need. So you have to balance between going for scale or really trying to help those who really need assistance. But of course, it doesn't always have to be in terms of cash. Perhaps cash transfers can only be targeted to those who are in absolute poverty, whereas those who are in relative poverty, other forms of assistance can be extended. One example is assistance more in insurance terms. Think of like unemployment insurance. Presently, we do have it, but there is a need to extend its coverage because it's limited to those only in formal work. But arguably, a lot of those who are in need, they're not in formal work. So the government will have to put in some money into this fund.
And Adam, Bumiputra households saw the highest average income growth, but notably their incomes are less diversified. Hasn't there been efforts to diversify it over the years? How would you propose the government approach it moving forward then?
Yeah, so this is based on our structural analysis of household income, where we found that the Bumis benefit less actually when we simulate investments into certain industries. And it shows that the economic base or the number of activities for the Bumiputra are a lot less. And another thing is that the nature of industries for the Bumiputra, they also tend to be a lot more public sector related, such as government services, education and health, or even sectors with very close links to the public sector, like petroleum mining and transport, manufacturing and services. So yeah, there is a need to broaden and diversify their economic activities, education, jobs, skills training. And probably most of this has been done and has been the focus of our affirmative action programs. So we really need to critically assess, you know, how effective they've been and how we could be improved. But beyond affirmative action, we actually also need to look at regional policies, because it turns out a lot of Bumiputra households are located in less advanced states. So if we can really nail our regional policies, identifying growth sectors, for example, what would be the leading kind of driving economic activity in each region, then naturally we would see that Bumiputras would also diversify and expand their narrow economic base.
What about the application of the Shared Prosperity Vision 2030?
Yeah, I think what they've identified is a good start. The question is more about, you know, how it's executed. What our report raises is that there are limits to growth through distributional policies like cash transfers, because a lot of whatever growth low-income states have seen in recent years was mainly driven by that. But of course, there are limits. So moving forward, transforming jobs is something that's really needed.
And we often talk about how, in order to improve the lives of households, Malaysia needs structural transformation and that shift to higher value-added businesses that will bring higher wage growth. But your report also points out that higher value-added activities tend to come with greater inequality. So the million-dollar question, how do you balance this?
Yeah, so presently we do see that higher income industries do have higher inequality. And then, as I mentioned, a lot of our workers are in lower value industries. But there is a trade-off that we have to make. We have to be willing to accept some increase in inequality. But it's not completely unavoidable, because while we are trying to transform jobs, we can strike a balance if we ensure that all workers are paid decently.
Yes, that was Adam Feroz at the Khazanah Research Institute. And these are the states of play in Malaysia today, and we can't really run from it. This report just really puts into stark contrast what's happening in the country, and it puts policymakers on the back foot, because what we do have is a lot of instability at the top level, at policy level. And just one paper, I get the impression that politicians and vote gathering and vote acquisition have basically put policymakers in a bit of a catch-22 situation, because by putting friendly policies in place, they've also, in a way, stymied the progress of the countries and the country's development and the need to go up the value chain. Because going up the value chain is not easy. It comes with a lot of pain, a lot of sacrifice, and you don't get to become the top student in class by being lazy and being given stuff and being entitled. You don't. It just comes from hard work, discipline and dedication.
Yeah,
and if a country, when you just go, you know, multiply it by 31 million people, that's what you get.
I think a lot of the focus, I think, for any government, and even this current government, past governments haven't been so much on structural issues, right? And the structural issues that we face, I think, of course, is the middle income trap. But even aside from the middle income trap, I'm alarmed by the fact that the lowest households only make 200 ringgit a month. I really wonder how they manage on a day-to-day basis. And the other worrying thing is, and this is brought up by not only just this survey, but also EPF, which shows that Malaysians have very, very little residual savings or very little residual income that allows them to save for retirement. So what's going to happen to us? And are we providing enough social security, enough social protection? And COVID-19, I think, really brings into question all of this, and something that the World Bank is also concerned for us as a country.
It doesn't come easy. It's not going to become easy. And the fact is, with zero interest rates, that divide is going to get even bigger, because the rich and wealthy have got assets to collateralize and leverage to get even more assets and to acquire even more income-yielding assets. And the poor, who are living paycheck to paycheck, just gets more and more squeezed. It really is something to be concerned
that's
about.
That's why we have the K-economy, and that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. Okay, 59 minutes past 7. We'll come back after this with the 8 o'clock news. And after that, Shaoning, you talk to the Science Minister, Kaiwi Jamaluddin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.